For the next few days following the stroke, my stamina waxed and waned proportionately with my napping and exerted effort. I learned early that every effort I put forth was the only effort that was important. On day one, for example, I had to rock and rock and rock some more before I had enough oomph to roll over. While in this stage of rocking, I had to recognize that rocking was the only activity that mattered. Focusing my success on the final goal of sitting up was not wise, because it was far beyond my current ability. If I had decided that sitting up was the goal, and then tried and failed repeatedly on every trial, I would have been disappointed with my inability and stopped trying. By breaking the effort of sitting up into the smaller steps of rocking and then rolling upward, I found regular success along the way, and celebrated accordingly, with sleep. So it was my strategy to rock and then rock some more. Once I mastered rocking frequently, then I strove to rock with enthusiasm. By the time I could rock with ease, my body flowed into the next natural movement of rolling upward. And then again, my efforts were all about rolling upward, frequently, and then with enthusiastic vigor. Rolling upward with enthusiasm led me right into sitting up, and I enjoyed the ongoing satisfaction of success. Essentially, I had to completely inhabit the level of ability that I could achieve before it was time to take the next step. In order to attain a new ability, I had to be able to repeat that effort with grace and control before taking the next step. Every little try took time and energy, and every effort was echoed by a need for more sleep. By day four, I was still spending most of my time sleeping, as my brain craved minimal stimulation. It was not that I was depressed, but my brain was on sensory overload and could not process the barrage of incoming information. Gigi and I agreed that my brain knew best what it needed to do in order to recover. Unfortunately, it is not common for stroke survivors to be permitted to sleep as much as they would like. But for me, we felt that sleep was my brain's way of taking a time out from new stimulation. We acknowledged that my brain was still physically traumatized, and it was obviously totally confused concerning the information coming in through my sensory systems. We agreed that my brain needed quiet time to make sense out of what it had just experienced. For me, sleep was filing time. You know how chaotic an office can become if you don't take time to file? It was the same for my brain. It needed time to organize, process, and file its hourly load. I had to choose between physical and cognitive efforts because they both wore me out. On the physical front, I was making terrific progress regaining my basic stability. I could sit up with some ease now, stand, and even walk a little down the hall with lots of assistance. My voice, on the other hand, was weak since I had no strength to expel air. As a result, I spoke in a soft whisper, and my speech was broken and labored. I struggled with finding the right word and frequently confused meanings. I remember thinking water, but saying milk. Cognitively, I struggled to comprehend my existence. I still couldn't think in terms of past or future, so I burned a lot of mental energy trying to piece together my present moment. Although thinking was very difficult for me, I was making cognitive improvement. I had grown accustomed to my doctor telling me to remember three things, and then at the end of our time together, asking me what those three things had been. Gigi says that she knew I was going to be all right the day he asked me to remember firefighter, apple, and 33 Whippoorwill Drive. I had failed this task miserably up to this point, but I decided that today I was going to pay attention to nothing else that he said and just repeat the words over and over again in my mind, holding them in memory until it was time to blurt them out. At the end of our visit, he asked me to recall the three items. With confidence, I uttered, firefighter, apple, something Whippoorwill Drive. Then I added that although I couldn't recall the exact address, I'd go up and down the street knocking on every door until I found the right house. Gigi breathed a huge sigh of relief when she heard this. To her, it indicated that my resourceful brain was back on track, and she was reassured that I would once again be able to find my way in the world. On that same day, Andrew came for his daily visit, and one of the games he would play with me to assess my cognitive aptitude was to ask me to count backwards from 100 by sevens. This task was particularly difficult for me because the cells in my brain that understood mathematics had been permanently destroyed. I asked someone for the first few answers to that question, and the next time Andrew asked me, I spewed 3 or 4 of the correct responses. I immediately confessed that I had cheated and really had no clue how to begin this task. But it was important to me that Andrew understand that although certain portions of my mind could not function, other parts of my brain, in this case my scheming mind, would compensate for lost abilities. On day 5, it was time for me to go home to get strong enough to endure surgery. A physical therapist taught me how to climb a stair with support, and then I was released to Gigi's care. I felt physically in peril as my mother drove like a Hoosier provincial in downtown Boston traffic. We draped my face to block out the sunlight. I prayed the whole way home.